Hey, peace, y'all. This is another episode of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. Today is a very special day for a lot of reasons. One, we have the team assembled in the spaceship this afternoon. Max the Snack Tour is in the building. Mercedes Zapata, the official new photog, who's also about to run social medias at Corner Store_pod, is in the building. And of course, as always, the super producer DJ Cashier is in the house. Today is a special day as well because my dear homie, a poet of the new incredible collection, Can I Kick It, someone who I refer to as hip hop's August Wilson, someone who tells the story of hip hop generation in micro cycles. A organizer, a creative director, an artistic director who recently moved to Louisville, Kentucky to take on a children's theater, and really like my closest homie on planet Earth, the man who coined the phrase the breakbeat poets, Idris Goodwin, is in the Corner Store.
I done made it. You know, Kev, I've known you a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a fan of a lot of the things that you do, you know what I mean? Like straight up, like, and I love this show, you know what I'm saying? I love the spirit of it. And, you know, I loved like your Mick Jenkins conversation was one of my faves. Loved when you talked to Jose, loved the conversation with Tanya Lozano recently. Like, I love a lot of the,
show. I'm glad you listened.
And I've often said like, you know, when I get on that show, I'm going to say this, that, and the third.
I know you've talked shit about not being invited before, but I've invited you several times. You just live elsewhere.
Well, you know, I mean, there's technology. We come a long way.
Well, here we are. And it's good to have you. You know, Idris, as per usual, Max the Snack Tour has secured you some shit out the Corner Store.
Oh, snap.
He was trying to channel, I think, like old man energy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like to say gentleman, but
gentlemen, yeah, right. Gentlemen. So he, in doing so, he has gotten for you some sparkling prickly pear and orange San Pellegrino.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on.
You like that? You rock with that?
If I was a can of carbonated beverage, that's what I would be. I would be a prickly pear with the orange.
In addition, he's also gotten you a two-piece, a shareable pack.
What?
Of 100 grand. Keep it 100 grand.
Hey, because I keeps it 100, though. I actually love 100 grand.
Right? I know. Yeah. Well done, Max.
Now, doctor say I ain't supposed to eat these, but.
Yo, man, welcome back to one of your old stomping grounds. The illest city on the planet,
man,
Chicago,
Illinois. I love being back here. And you know what I love is, you know, when I came in here, you know, your squad, we're talking about, yeah, we was down at the teacher strike and I was taking photos down there and I was DJing down there for, you know, and I love that, man. And it was very organic. It was very like, it's like, of course, that's what an artist does. Of course, I'm connected with the schools because the schools bring me out, you know what I'm saying? And to have me connect with the young people. And that thing about like, I just feel like Chicago was so ahead of that. Like now that's very much, I mean, it's not like y'all invented it, but like
in the
hip hop generation, what I'm saying is in the hip hop generation to very clearly draw a line from hip hop's grassroots origins as like an alternative to like gang violence with the party rock, you know, like this community here has always been about that 100%. And when I've gone to other communities that hasn't been, you know, always such a clear and bold line. And I love that I just overheard that like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I love it here so much for that reason. I mean, the city's very changed as well. Like, I'm like, where is everything? Like, I feel like we go, no matter what street we go on, it's starting to kind of look alike. You know, it's just like great condo building. I'm like, who's in these buildings?
These are the good questions, man. Well, it's good to have you back. Of course, you're in town tonight because we're doing a reading in celebration of your new book.
Yeah, man.
Can I Kick It?
Very excited.
We'll go back and we'll go all over the place. Sure. But just up top, just give people quick the socials so they can stay in tune. We'll get them at the end as well.
Sure.
But
like, yeah. It's just, I'm at Idris Goodwin, IDRIS, last name GOODWIN, at Idris Goodwin on IG. On Twitters, Idris Goodwin Writes on Facebook. That's the artist page. I'm all over the place. I'm very findable.
Yeah,
very findable.
Yeah. Very Googleable.
Yeah.
Or as my dad calls it, a Guggle.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he does the Yiddish version.
Yeah, he knows. He, by the way, he knows it's called Google.
Yeah,
but I love the stubborn. Just I like mine better.
Yeah,
shout out Danny Kobe.
So this book is brilliant, man. I'm a fan. I mean, I was a early reader.
But
give us a little snapshot of what this book is all about.
Yeah, I mean, so the short version is that, you know, it's really like me playing around with the idea of sampling, which is, you know, this practice that, you know, was very much the norm and really blew my mind and inspired me in the early days of hip hop, like taking an existing thing, digging in the crates and flipping it, making it personal, and playing with this thing of like, this is culturally specific and universally loved, but I'm gonna put my spin on it, right? So like, we've all sampled James Brown's drums, we've all sampled this, we all love it, but I'm gonna spin it. And so I'm trying to do that with poetry, but also playing around with popular culture in a very flagrant way that I think we were, in a way that people in the world of literature, whatever, poetry, we're encouraged not to do, right? Because it's seen as shallow or trivial. And I'm like, no, I'm going all the way in with this. Like, so the first poem in the book is me kind of playing around with, it's called Back to the Afro Future, 1965. And it basically is kind of like, you know, at the end of Back to the Future, which is a film from 1985 for all your listeners who are under the age of 35. At the end, it's a time travel movie, and through various circumstances, the hero Marty McFly ends up playing music at the dance where his parents are going to kiss for the first time. And in the process, he invents rock and roll because he starts like shredding, right? Now, obviously, it's very problematic to suggest a white man invented rock and roll, but still a great movie. Shout out Michael J. Fox. And so in my version, in the poem, it actually has me going back to 1965 in Detroit and DJing my parent a dance in Detroit and inventing hip hop.
Well, shit, you want to just read
you
that poem?
Just read that,
yeah, why not?
Okay, I mean, I kind of spoiled
the reference. No, it's good.
All right, here we go. Back to the Afro Future, 1965. And I've arrived to roam a pre-riot, pre-crack Detroit, where the blocks are filled with fathers. And because my teenage dad don't need lessons on game and no brother's name Biff, no meddling necessary. My time free, so I spin wild with Doc Brown, named because of his likeness to Julius Irving. Plating his head thanks to shrapnel, a parting gift from the service where he was in communications. We tinker with some stereo equipment, some old record players. We raid the 45s, and at the get down under the sea dance, I blend the Temptations into the Tops and Mary Wells into the Supremes. And that James Brown, I Feel Good, smuggled in the passenger of the DeLorean, get him grooving, and I get that feeling too. I start cutting it up, crab, transform, scratch, blend. The DJ who hurt his head rushes to long distance call his Caribbean cousin. Yo, Clive, you know that new sound you've been looking for? And the whole thing spin full. I am Grandmaster Flash, Grandmaster DST, Jam Master J, Cut Creator, Qbert, cutting up the same James Brown records they will cut for the next 50 years until the end of time. I look up at the crowd for the first time. They give that look only aggravated black folk can. This the era of harmony. Hendrix has yet to shred metal. They don't know about black noise over the measure. Only black noise in the dark. Hell, they not even wearing afros yet. Guess y'all not ready, I say. But your kid's gonna love it.
Mm, yeah, man.
That's that piece.
Yeah, that's that piece. Yo, I love that piece, and it's like, I want, after you read it, I want to come back and be like, that's Idris Goodwin off of his new joint, Can I Kick It?
Yeah, that's good.
But it's because it's bars, you know? It's a poem that tells a story, but it's also that there's so many bars in it. It's music.
Yeah, thank you.
You of course, come from Detroit.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, man.
I know a good amount about your family, but not everyone listening does. What do your folks do? What did they do?
Yeah, so, you know, it should come to no surprise that, like most folk of my age and generation, you know, my family has ties to the auto industry. My grandfather, James Goodwin, worked on the line. I always mess this up. I want to say GM. It was probably GM. Could have been Ford's. Could have been Chrysler. One of those three, though.
Big three, yeah.
But I'm a bad grandson because I don't remember. Worked on the line, and my pops told me a story that, like, you know, it was layoff. You get, you know, union stuff. You get laid off for a while and then be back to work. And, you know, it was like physical labor, you know, and he always told my pops, like, you don't want to be on the line. You want to be one of the guys in the white shirt in the air conditioning office.
Damn.
And so my pops was in management, you know, yeah, what I'm saying? Like, he was very, one of the smartest people I know for sure. And, you know, really exceptional human being. And, you know, really, like, worked his way up that sort of executive line but worked in car, the auto business, you know, worked for all three. I think he worked for all three companies. Wow. At one point. But we knew him. We knew him and saw that. But, like, my memory, it's mostly with Chrysler. It was mostly, he retired with Chrysler. But now he's chilling. He's playing golf down in Florida.
And mom's?
And my mother was an urban planner. Also an amazing and dynamic human, and definitely where I get, I think, most of my creative spirit from, you know, the fire.
Yeah.
Comes from my mom.
Yeah, you come from really good people.
Great people, man. Detroit is, like, special, man. It's I was watching this documentary about Motown recently, you know, and they talked about, like, why Motown happened, like, the forces that happened, and it's because of this strong, you know, industry, you know what I'm saying, auto industry, which has all sorts of different arms and tentacles to it. But, you know, it was a strong middle class. And then also there was, like, art in the public schools. So when Berry Gordy's like, yo, galvanizing all these teenagers, they knew how to play music. They knew how to sing in harmony. They were smart, you know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, my folks are kind of that generation, you know. I mean, they were going to school with the Motown people, you know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah, it's that spirit, man. And
that's a sense of civic responsibility that you have also carry and, you know, in your practice is also, you know, deeply connected and intertwined in various communities that you've been a part of over, you know, the last 25 years of your practice or some shit like that. Right.
Yeah.
Or 20, you know, you came up, after that. Not after that Motown era, but in a different musical era.
Yes, sir.
And I know in your last book, These Are the Breaks, you talk a little about coming up as a hip-hop kid in Detroit.
Yeah, it was a weird, you know, it's funny because Detroit is so cool now. You know what I mean? It's so creative. And I think I just missed it or something. Like, I mean, I was also in the Burbs. That was a big part of it, too. But I feel like the whole hip-hop shop, Maurice Malone era, like, came, like, right when I was leaving, like, right when I graduated. And so, like, it didn't get the I would consider, like, you know, and so much of, like, with techno and all, it was in these very isolated pockets. It was very indoors, very disconnected. And so for me, it was all, I was looking outward. I was like, I'm gonna get out of here. And then, you know, I came to Chicago and there was so much activity centralized in neighborhoods. And then every time I would go back to Detroit, I'd be like, oh, is that a gallery over there? Like, what is that over there? Like, boom, boom, boom. And you know, artists I know, like Invincible and Finale and, like, a lot of the hip hop cats, like, out there, I would start to connect with more later when they would come to Chicago, you know? But for me, my experience in my formative years was very isolated. It was mostly me by myself. I mean, I had some friends who liked hip hop, but no one who had real aspirations to get, you know, become a writer, become an artist in any way, shape, or form.
Who was putting that battery in your back? I mean, how did you develop?
Oh, my brother loved rap music.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. Like, Malik, that's my brother's name. I mean, we, you know, there was no way we were not going to be obsessed with that music. I mean, 1979, Rapper's Delight comes out. I was born in 1977, so in Detroit, Michigan, and, like, there was no way. I mean, it just wildfire. Like, we all loved the music. And so my brother dubbed me. One of the most important moments in the timeline of my life is when Malik made me a high speed dub of Big Daddy Kane's seminal album Long Live the Kane, which I played forwards, backwards, memorized every single word to, and, you know, attribute everything in my writing practice today to, like, Kane. Like,
yeah,
clarity, dexterity, and flow. Like,
yeah,
clarity, dexterity, very, like, those records, nobody's messing with. Like, his flow on Set It Off, for example, please.
Yeah.
So, I just knew, man, like, something just told me, like, this is not for nothing. Like, when I was not doing my homework and I was writing raps in my room to no one, I just, something told me, like, this is going to pay off later. You know, I had no idea I was going to become a playwright and a professor, you know, all that stuff. But
well, right. So, I mean, because so you were developing this penchant for language and the ability to bend words and everything like that.
Yeah.
When did you get wanting to tell these stories? I mean, when did that enter, the narrative aspect into the theatrical realm?
Yeah, well, so I knew that in 1995, 96, there was nowhere on the planet I could go be a hip-hop major. Right. So I also had this love for film. I worked at a video store. And for those listeners who are under the age of 35, you used to actually. No, I'm just kidding.
Tell Max. He might not know.
No, Max knows for some reason. Max has been here before.
OK. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But for those of you who are not Max. Yeah. Videos. Just Google it. Anyway. But that was one of the best and most important jobs I ever had, was working at a video store.
Where is this? Where were you?
This is in the suburbs of Detroit, okay. In the town I came up in. It was like when my job, little job, 16, 17, 18 years old. And it was like a family owned video store. You know, Blockbuster never messed with me, man. I think I applied to Blockbuster. Like, yeah, I don't know. I was like, why y'all not rocking with me? Am I like, yeah, I don't get it. But no, this one was way better. And so I had like this hardcore love of film and was going back through, I was watching Hitchcock. You know, I was like the only 17-year-old black dude in the suburbs of Detroit watching like Hitchcock movies on his own. Like, yeah. Not like because somebody told me to.
Well, that's the thing about working in a video store, a record store, even a bookstore at that time. Right. It became kind of your classroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what's up. And so I was going to do that. And so I came to Chicago to go to Columbia College. But there was just this hip hop practice that I had. It was really my ritual. And to this day, like, I separate it, you know, where like books and plays and, you know, film, all that stuff, you know, those are things that I do professionally. Hip hop informs all of it, but it's my practice, like my martial art, you know what I mean? And so I was always doing it. And so when I found out, you know, first it was like Wabash, like being on Wabash, outside of Columbia College, you know, and I remember like cats from like, I would learn this later. At the time, I didn't really realize it, but like cats from like Rubber Room and like Psychodrama and like, you remember Dinky?
Yeah.
Like Dink would be out there and like Kingdom and cats who like, well, I had no idea that these guys were legendary, you know, but it was just, we would just form like Voltron and sometimes I would rhyme, sometimes I wouldn't, you know, I was probably very trash, but like, I was like, wow, this is a new way to do this practice that we, for me, was just alone. And like,
so what was that like, you know? Then go, cause this, I mean, you write about this a lot. You write about the cipher a lot.
Absolutely.
And so venturing into a public space with this thing that you were doing.
Well, so it was interesting cause you know, I feel like hip hop is different now where like, you know, it's wild. Like you watch, there is something called the cipher that is televised, which I think people don't realize how insane that it, I mean, like, that's wild to me, you know, because the cipher was something that happened after the show. Like you would go to a concert and you'd watch The Roots or De La Funky Homo Sapien or Wu-Tang or something, and then after it was over, outside the concert, you would be so open, you would cipher. So cipher was tangential. It was not on stage. That was backstage. It was off stage.
Yeah.
No one would ever televise a cipher, right?
No.
The thought was crazy. So
every now and again, an artist might even from their show pop out.
Oh,
every now and again.
Yeah, right. I always found that like it would always be like the worst rappers would like the good rappers always have bad timing where it's like the worst rappers would be like, oh, I cyphered with Wyclef last night, you know, whatever. That's very shots random. Well. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. No, it's not a shot. Okay. I love Wyclef Jean.
You don't want to do your impression?
No, I can't do my Wyclef Jean impression. though I will
it's
say
very
this
very good though.
Hello, Kevin. At the end of the day, Kevin.
Anyway, Wyclef is in the building.
A friend of mine accidentally told me a story about Wyclef Jean asking her on a date.
Oh.
And I just tortured her with impressions of Wyclef Jean. Like, I'm going to take you to Red Lobster. Anyway, what are we talking about?
Because yeah, cipher, yeah.
Yeah, and so I knew they existed because I used to like actually mail order Tony Touch tapes from like Tape Kings.
Yeah.
That's what I was
in
doing
back,
at 16.
You see him in the back of
the source and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and I'd be
yeah.
like, don't mind if order. I do.
And it would be like a prayer the first time. Yes. You're like, yo, I don't know if I'll ever get this like $4.99 back. Tape.
Yeah. But when you did get it, oh, that's like you played the paint off of that.
Yeah, thing. Exactly.
But those things, I mean, man, those things taught us how to rap, man. Those of us in the burbs, those of us who weren't in communities where that would like pop up organically, like those were, that was relief, you know, that was like, Yeah. Somebody dropping, like, you know, grain out of a plane, you know what I mean?
That's right.
That's probably not a good analogy. Anyway, so when I first got into a...
Culturally starving.
Yeah. Culturally starving.
Yeah. It's just different.
No, same. I just make it worse.
It's different.
Yeah, so when I got in those first ciphers, man, it was like, you know, it was amazing. It was like the most extraordinary thing ever. And then I found Wicker Park, and I found spots like The Note. Shout out Larry Miller. Shout out Shadow Master. Shout out Allo.
Right, and what was going on in Wicker? I mean, this is what I'm writing
the
about.
The 606, right. You know, like just the hip-hop open mics on like a Monday or a Tuesday, you know, the off nights. And we'd just be in there hooping and hollering until all hours of the night, rhyming on stage. And
how important was that as a young artist to kind of cut your, get your chops in communities and spaces like that?
It's indescribable. I mean, it's everything, you know. It was like a baptism. It gave me, like, when real MCs, I always joke and say this too, like, there was this cat, there was this crew called the Nomads, and there was a guy in that group named Terry D. And Terry D was not to be played with. And if Terry D said you could rhyme, you could rhyme. And so, you know, that's it for me. I mean, that was confidence. That was, and not confidence like arrogance, like, oh, wait, now I'm gonna cut my demo tape. You know what I mean? Which I was recording, but it was deeper than that. Like, to this day, like, I don't have aspirations of being like a rap artist, but I often think about the older I get and the more new spaces I venture into as a professional, I look back on those times as being really grateful. Because they're gone. They're not quite, it won't be quite like that again.
Yeah.
It just gave me so much, man. It taught me, yeah, it just taught me everything.
So
language is escaping me right now.
No, you're doing good. Buddy. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I know that those spaces mean a lot. You write about them a little in Can I Kick It.
Mm-hmm.
From Columbia, you start to study film.
Yes, sir.
When did theater come into the mix for you?
Yeah, theater's bugged out because, again, this is what's so great about the city, man. Is there's all these outlets, you know? It's like I was looking for any outlet, anywhere I could just do my thing and my creativity could just be open. And so after I graduated Columbia, you know, I was in a bit of a crisis because I was like, I knew I cannot move to L.A. at 21 by myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, with no nothing, with no uncles in the business, no internship, nothing like that. Because this is like pre-Black Panther. Like, people wasn't checking for Black people in Hollywood.
Right.
And you know, according to some accounts, they still not. But certainly not in 1996. I graduated in 2000. Not in 2000. And so, you know, I didn't know really quite what to do. So I got a really bad job, a bad TV job. And
doing what?
I worked for a daytime talk show as like a page, essentially. Like, I worked in the green rooms, and it was like one of these trashy ones.
This is the Jenny Jones show?
It was the Jenny Jones. I'm trying to not, you know.
Why? What happened?
Because I was talking.
Jenny Jones going to come out and be like, yo, we just
go
in.
You know what I mean? She might. She got free time. It was when Springer was also taping.
I
would see the Springer audience and the Jenny Jones audience. And that was
some crossover there.
It was some crossover for sure.
Yeah.
And it was like fascinating. But I worked in the green rooms. And so I remember when the Cash Money Millionaires were on.
What were they talking about?
They were just so from New Orleans. It's like the draw was in effect.
Young Wayne.
People, yeah, everybody. Lil Weezy. Like, Weezy was in there. Baby.
Yeah.
All of them. All the characters. Juvie. This is back when Juvie was with them.
Right, all right.
Yeah, so that was a good day. And but I knew, I was like, this is what.
Did you pass him a mixtape?
I did not pass him a mixtape. Okay. I was just utterly shocked. and I was like working as a PA for this production company, you know, so I was just trying to get it together. And then I went back to school. I went to the School of the Art Institute, had a very small writing program. A lot of people don't even realize the School of the Art Institute has a writing program. And at the time, I just was like, okay, I only know screenwriting and writing these bars. So what's the closest thing? I was like, oh, there's a playwriting instructor here, you know? And I was like, I'll try that. At that point, I used to kick it with a lot of actors at Columbia because of my short films and stuff like that. And, you know, but they were mostly doing plays. And so I would help my homies, like, learn their lines and stuff like that. Shout out John Putman. And I would, like, be reading these plays and being like, oh, either I'd say, oh, this play is trash. Like, why are they doing this play? Or I'd say, oh, this play is pretty good. You know, I could write something like this, you know, that kind of thing. And so I met this at School of Art Institute, an instructor, Bo O'Reilly, at a theater company. He has a theater company called Curious Theater Branch. And he was like, yo, you should write a play. I have this festival I do up on the north side, this now defunct spot called the Lunar Cabaret, which was this tiny, tiny little spot. And there was a theater in the back and seated like maybe 60 people. And so I wrote this play and just for two characters. And Bo hooked me up with this director. Shout out Stefan Brun. Stefan directed the joint, and we got a good review in the Reader. And that's kind of all I need. That was the kind of encouragement, much like being in the Cypher and Terry D saying, yeah, you got bars. Like, you know, naively, I was like, oh, this reviewer thinks I'm good. You know, I naively believed the theater reviewer.
It wasn't Brian M. Tusak.
No, it was not Brian M. Tusak. It was not. You know who it was? It was Jack.
It wasn't Helbig. Chris Jones.
No, it was Jack. Oh, okay, no, it definitely was not Chris Jones. Okay. Jack Helbig. Jack Helbig. Shout out Jack Helbig.
That's amazing, though, that was like a cosign. I mean, but that's what it, when you're young, especially, it's like you need people to be like, yeah, continue.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that was it. And like, hip hop was different because, like, I knew I was good. Like, I knew I was, like, you know, I didn't think I was, like, the greatest rapper on the planet, but, like, I knew I was good. Right. Like, yeah. I knew I had done my homework. Like, because I came up on Kane. Like, if you come up on Kane, like, you're going to be all right. So I came up on Kane and Big Daddy Kane. But shout out Kane, the graffiti artist. And so, yeah, Jack Helbig showed me some love. He also just, like, demolished the play I did next year. So that was my education.
Right,
like,
right.
He ain't your homeboy.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's all. And then I just kept getting better. And it was, like, on the job because I didn't study theater. I didn't go to theater college. Like, I'm not even that much of a theater head, to be honest. Like, I like what I like. I don't like what I don't like. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, I can sit through all types of hip-hop that I don't even like very much. You know what I mean? Like, I actually listened to the entire Blueface album. Like, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it's different to digest something in the genre that you kind of fuck with just universally as opposed to be like, I do this. Yeah. Like, I feel that way about poems. You know what I mean? I will read and a lot of poems, but it's hard to like sit through an entire book of trash ass poems.
Yeah, no, of course.
And
yeah,
there are a lot of trash ass books, poems.
Listen, you said it and I didn't.
But it's interesting. It's interesting because now you have plays circulating throughout the nation.
These are plays circulating throughout the nation.
You know, you do like, I mean, it's amazing.
One I wrote
it's,
with you.
I know, no, but others
and listen,
too.
A nefarious one.
No, I know. Yeah, we got in a lot of trouble. Play. Yeah, we got in trouble.
Man, that was a lie. That was funny. Like, we got in like middle class people trouble. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
upper
yeah,
middle,
yeah.
Like, oh, you've upset. You know, I mean, I'm like, please, this ain't smoke. Terry D said I was like, please.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you don't want it with me. I know.
Like, Terry D, like, you, yeah. That's the review you don't want, the bad review from Terry D.
Right.
I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, if it comes from.
But anybody who's not Terry D, like, bring it.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, it's light.
I know I'm dope.
But it's amazing though to see, you know, from, because I met you in around that time, and then when you were just starting out as a playwright, and now, I mean, there are many cities in this moment who are producing different plays of yours as we speak.
That's right.
So
including This Is Modern Art, which I wrote with you.
Yeah, it's true. I know.
That's yeah, but good. Yeah, This Is Modern Art, the breakbeat plays, How We Got On, The Realness, Hype Man, which is coming to Chicago next year.
Oh yeah, when does that drop?
I want to say like February of like, oh wait, not even next year. That's like February 21. Anyway, don't hold your breath. It's going to be a little minute, but yeah, Hype Man's fire. Like I'm writing really fire plays, man. You know what I mean?
But they are telling these hip hop generational stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're doing what, to me, is hip, you know, that you do in hip-hop, which is, like, you talk about what's going on right now. Like, you talk about, like, you know, you talk about Gwendolyn Brooks all the time saying, like, tell a story that's right outside, you know, like, that's in front of you. And so I try to write plays that speak to the moment, but also doing it in a way where, like, somebody's actually going to want to sit through it. Like, you know what I mean? Where, like, who decided that, like, we got to have all this furniture? You know what I'm saying? Like, What's with all this furniture plays? Like, you know what I mean? Like, once upon a time, there was a couch that had some people on it arguing.
Right. Yeah,
like,
everything's in the living room.
Yeah, once upon a time, there was some end tables with a lamp on it, and some people sat on it and talked about, like, their, you know, their you know, dreams. Like, I don't, that's not for me.
Yeah.
You know, I want to write something I would actually want to go to that, like, everybody in this room would actually want to sit through. And so, yeah, so that's what the breakbeat plays are. It's like trying to channel the energy, the excitement, the rhythm, the exuberance of hip hop, the life force of hip hop, which is hip hop's all about life. It's about like being awake and present and alive, because it comes out of, you know, instant like connection. Like the DJ is watching you and knows when you're open, when you're like vibing, when you're like having that transcendent moment. And so you can't really front, like the body's reaction is the true reaction, right? Because the intellect is secondary. The intellect is not instant. The intellect is like, well, let's think about that for a second. But no, the body knows what's up.
Yeah, make the head nod, you know?
Yo, man, like, yeah. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah.
No, but that, you know, can I tell you, that's interesting, because I don't know. We talk about it a lot, but I wonder where you're at with this. It's like, you're not out to necessarily, you don't have an allegiance to theater as a genre necessarily, right? I mean, it's not like you...
I do and I don't, right? Like, I see the same way, and I feel this way about poetry as well. Like, the best poetry is said around the dinner, like, not around the dinner table per se, but like at the gathering. Yeah. The best poetry is said at the
on
gathering.
On a train, on a corner.
Everywhere. Yeah. It's everywhere, because it's just what we do as a species. Similarly with theater, it's everywhere. So just somebody just decided it's these like four things, which is very much, and you know, I mean, the American theater is tailored to, you know, rich people. You know what I'm saying? It's a rich people's pastime. And God bless those people, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm like, why don't you consider other folks, what they might be interested, their aesthetics, their interests, the things that captivate them? Maybe they don't want to sit for 2 hours with an intermission. Why don't you try it in 80 minutes? You know, not all plays are created equal. And so like, now that I run a theater company, like, you know, you might be like, okay, Dries, if you throwing all this shade on theater, why do you run a theater company? And it's like, well, the reason is because I still believe in this very ancient form of gathering to see ourselves. It's a mirror. And so, but who said it has to involve furniture? Who says it has to have an intermission? Who says it has to be like tired and not topical or not
remix of Greek myths or something?
Which is, and that can be hot too, but I'm like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that, like, that's my beef. My beef is with the sort of, and listen, I don't even, it's not even that big of a beef, because I'm very much about, like, just build your own. Very much in a hip-hop spirit. Like, I'm not waiting for the radio to check. I'm not waiting for anybody else to check for me. Like, I'm checking for who's checking for me. You know, I write for those who believe in me, who are coming in, you know, who are checking for me. That's it. Like, yeah. I'm not sweating. Like, I won't be at your whack party anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, my party's fresher, you know?
Right. So I wonder how that carries over then into the world of poetry and what the relationship is, just even in your own headspace of, I'm going to sit down, write this play. I'm going to sit down and write this book of poems.
Very different. Very different, Kevin. So, I mean, after this interview, like, I might not be a professional playwright anymore, but no, like, you know, I'm a professional playwright, meaning that I liken it to being a tailor. Like, that is a craft that I practice, that I enjoy. And but it's different. Like, poetry is my unmitigated, unfiltered thoughts and part of myself. It's my day to day. It's my journaling. It's like, it's a piece of me. And also with this book, man, I was like, and listen, and shout out to you, man. Like, I love the way in which you carefully consider and think about and craft like your books. And I've seen you do it with numerous books. And I think my first book, These Are the Breaks, was more like, you know, the era we came up in, like, you needed a book so you could go teach. You needed a book to get in the conversation. So I was like, yeah, at some point I'm probably going to need a book. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so that book started because, like, I had all these, like, essays that I had written for the radio when I was living in Iowa City. And then I had other joints here and there. And it was kind of like I had an opportunity. Write Bloody Books reached out to me. And their whole thing is, like, they were looking for poets who, you know, performed a lot. They had like more of an indie rock spirit. So it was like, if you were an artist who liked performing and liked being out there. So I made an album called Breakbeat Poems in 2010. Shout out SGE, Lee Chess, shout out Al, Anomaly. I put that album out, Breakbeat Poems. Go copy. You can get it on all the streaming services. Very dope. One of the best things I've ever done. Right Bloody heard that album and they liked the album and they were like, do you want to do a book? So this was not off my, you know, what, you know what I mean? It wasn't like awesome pieces I submitted. He like heard my album, was like, hey, I see you like to tour. I see you're serious about it. Do you ever, you know, I hear that you also like exist in the spoken word space. So anyway, but I didn't really know about books or how to sell books or how to really move a book the right way. And I moved some units on These Are the Breaks, but I didn't know what I was doing really. And so, which is why I hadn't really done another one in a long time. But through watching you and like, you know, people like Nate Marshall and seeing the Breakbeat Poetry Anthology come out and, you know, and just really in Jose's book and like books I really, you know, I buy poetry books, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Ed Bach Lee just put a dope book out. Like I actually do, you know, I go to the library, I go straight to the poetry section first. Like I really like reading the poetry that I like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And collection, like books and poems.
Yeah, and books and poems, anthologies. Yeah. Like, I really dig it. And so, you know, I was like, I want to really try that. I want to really think thematically, conceptually about what this book is and is going to investigate. And I found myself, I had this moment where I was, like, reading stuff on Twitter. And I was about to, like, send a pop off, you know what I mean? I was about to like be like, eh. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, why don't I just write this as a, like, I have more to say here than actually 240 characters, you know? So I did it as an exercise. Then I did it again. Then I did it again. And then I was like, oh, wait, you know, I'm gonna actually now make this like how, like much like in the cipher, the more topical and timely you are, like meaning like something that just happened, if you can reference it in the cipher, people are going to go nuts. If you set it up the right way, people will go crazy. You know what I mean? So I was like, can I do that in a book of poems? Like, how fast could I write a poem about something happening right now? And how quickly could people receive this, right? Which is like, when has that ever happened in a book of poems, right? Where you open a poem and like, it's referencing something that happened maybe a year ago, right? Rare. I'm not saying rare, never. Yeah, obviously, yeah. Some people do it really well. But
in that, part, just the publishing schedule doesn't necessarily allow for that.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. Yeah. That as well. But I mean, there's poems in here that like I was like, pushing. I was like, oh, I gotta get that one in there before, you know, the Curtis Blow joint.
Yeah,
like that story had just broke, and I remember telling y'all like, let me get one more, I gotta put this in here, because like the idea had just popped into my head. So it became really fun, and something I realized that I think I forgot about, and I think most writers don't think of themselves as, is like creative writers, like we're conceptual artists, and so these are very conceptual poems. And that was really fun for me because, like, I think visually like that because of theater, because of my background in film. I think, you know, in those kind of ways. I think of the layers. I think of, like, all those things. And so that's – it became really freeing to step outside of, like, I'm going to, like, comb the depths of my interior. But instead thinking of, like, what's a concept for this? What's an interesting take on this piece of news, right? And then it would always find its way into the personal, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's one of the things I love about your plays, too. Even if the play is not about you, there are elements of you in your characters or, your, you know, some of your life will appear in these maybe fictionalized jump-off places. But, you know, I think you've historically done a really beautiful job of weaving in what is intimate in your life into what might be distant in your writing from you, you know?
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. I mean, that's another thing definitely that, like, you and the YCA squad, like, that cohort of poets, you know, really pushed me towards. Because I think before that, you know, I had once upon a time, I had a theater collective here, and I was more, like, writing to try to learn about plays and theater. So I was writing things for other actors and was just learning, like, how do you craft, you know, a theater, like a play, like how do you write like a play in a certain style or whatever. And those plays weren't really personal. And when I made the switch with How We Got On in 2011, you know, 2010 is when I wrote it.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite plays ever. Like I love that play.
Yo, I'm gonna say this, man. How We Got On is the best play. I will never do anything like that. That will never happen again. That not like that. Like, listen, yeah. I've written some quote unquote good plays since then. Like Hype Man is a much more, I think, is a sharper, like, dramatic, whatever you want to call it. Like Hype Man is like my craft play. Like, look, theater world, like I can write a very good long scene. Like, you know what I'm saying? But How We Got On was the culmination of like my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like that first album.
Yeah. Right.
And then, like, you know, it's like Illmatic, and then you never, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah, different. Yeah, I mean, just in the sense that, like, I didn't really rock with Nas's records after that, like, kind of at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Not at all?
Some records, but not the
some
album.
Songs. Nas some, is like, not, is a great song.
Yeah, and he's got joints he's got after joints. That, but he got gassed and too many people whispered in his ear about how much money he can make or whatever.
I mean, how could you not, though? If you're, like, 20 years old.
And have, like, the illest project of all time. No, I know. It's
what was
easy.
He supposed to do?
Just, I don't know, stick to the pen. I'm not sure. He just fell the fuck off is my point, in a way that, like, your plays since How We Got On have been also fire, though.
You're now making me think of, like, an alternate universe where, like, Nas just, like, disappeared. You know what I mean? Like J.D. Salinger just, like, disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, after Illmatic.
He kind of did.
I mean, he kind of did, but yeah. He didn't, like, disappear.
No.
But I mean, like, what did he, like?
Maybe he was hanging out too much. Maybe that's part of the problem.
I think it's what you first said. I think it's like he got gas and the pressure's there. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? And It Was Written's got some joints. I mean, wait, It Was Written has
that Lauryn Hill joint. World, I know. No, dude, that's a. I love the record.
What else is on there? Yeah, but I feel like you could, if you took, like, every post Illmatic record,
he's got a record.
You could combine, like, yeah, if you took, that would be a fire record, though.
Yeah.
There's that joint with his dad, is one of my
favorite.
Bridging the Gap's one of my favorite songs of
all time. Yeah, and the Nas's Illmatic record has some heat, you know, like, but. And I love Nas. This is not, like, a slander against Nas. I mean, it's just different in the sense that I think you've stayed consistently getting better each time out.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I would not say the same thing about him.
You're saying I'm better than Nas. All right, cool. What's next?
Yeah, well, quote that. I do want to say that, you know, just to set the story straight, like, you coined the term the breakbeat poets.
That's correct.
But I want... Because in my memory, this is how it happened.
Yeah.
We were on the telephone.
We were on the telephone.
Because you were living wherever the fuck you... Because you've been moving around.
No, I was in the Shy at the time still.
Were
I was
you?
Still in the Shy. Yeah.
Oh, word?
Yeah. I was still in the Shy.
Okay.
No, I remember that.
Okay. Because we would...
Because I put that album out, Breakbeat Poems, in like 2010. And I recorded that album when I was living in New Mexico. Which was like 08. Which was like 07. Like 08. 09
is when I was working on it. But I feel like that's when
it was before that. That's why I called it that. That's why I called it Breakbeat Poems.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, I don't think you were in the city.
I was, bro. I'm telling you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Well, why were
we
on the phone then, as opposed to just, like,
because you were probably where you was at.
We wouldn't all love each other like that.
Like, you had your life. I have mine.
I know, but I remember we would have a lot of conversations, and I feel like about what was happening with the aesthetics of, like, our generation.
I guess it doesn't really matter where we were, per se. Right?
Nah, but in my mind, you were in New Mexico.
Well,
shit.
You know, one of the things you do that you just decide, like, you were like, we was in the lobby of Applebee's, and I'm like, where are we? Like, who cares? We're moving on. Like,
but we were in a conversation about the aesthetics of the generation.
Yes.
And this was a long standing conversation.
Yes, it was.
And then what happened? Like, how did?
I mean, you know what it is, man. It's like, we were fighting so hard, man. Again, like, Muggs don't get it, and I get. There's no way to not sound like, you kid don't know how it was, but it really was, man. Like, Muggs, like, don't realize, man. Like, we were on the fringe, bro. Like, we were not. Nobody was checking for us, man.
Yeah.
Like, we were so niche. And, I mean, like,
we're
nobody was.
We're reading at the Poetry Foundation,
and we're going to read at the Poetry Foundation tonight. Which is, like, I still don't believe it. I feel like it's like a Ashton Kutcher going to jump out and be like, "You're not reading anywhere, bro." I haven't worked on my Ashton Kutcher. My Ashton Kutcher is not as good as my Wyclef Jean.
What is it as good as your Killer Mike?
I'm not. My Killer Mike is not really ready spaghetti, but because I'm in a good mood and I'm looking forward to this 100 grand bar, I'm going to go ahead and
try
my Killer Mike. So this is going to be really bad. All right, so ask me. Pretend you're the interviewer.
Me? Can I pretend
you're
myself?
You. Okay. I don't know why I'm thinking. Yeah. Pretend you're you. You know, it's terrible. I'm just going to say this. At first, I was like,
I'm
LP. You're Tavis Smiley. I'm like, oh, wait, no. I'm like, pretend you're Charlie Russell. Oh, wait, no. Pretend you're Matt Lauer. Oh, my God. There's no newscast. It's just an AI now that's just like, so tell me a bunch. Anyway, all right.
Do I have to ask you a question?
So, yeah, ask Killer Mike a question.
Any particular question?
Any question that you want to ask Killer Mike right now.
All right. Hey, Killer Mike, you know, what is your new favorite television show?
Dog. my new favorite television show is Black Stranger Things.
I like it.
That was Killer Mike.
I like it.
He's always like, he's always like, it's the intensity of the response. And he will, within the first two sentences, put the word black in there somewhere.
I remember, because you did it on the phone, for me, you also said he'll also like juxtapose what he just said a lot.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So here's the thing, Kevin Koval. 100 grand is a reference to all the black Grandmaster Flash wannabe impersonators that lived in Atlanta. Here's what people don't know.
Exactly. Anyway, he is on some here's what people don't know.
Yeah, here, and it involves.
No, yeah, good. I like the interstitials. That's important to have the character's interstitials down.
Yeah,
because exactly. Then it gets you. That's good.
I'm still working on it. I'm working out the kinks.
That's good. You are kind of a master of impressions.
I don't know about a master.
You do a lot. You got a good DM. You got a great DMX.
Yeah, thank you. I feel bad impersonating DMX right now because he's going through some problems.
That's fair.
I made a joke. Like, well, I've been like lately, you know, I make little jokes. And I've been making little DMX shows lately, and like people have been groaning because they feel like I'm like punching down.
Okay. You do a great KRS-One.
I do a great KRS-One, but he might be listening. So,
fair enough. I won't go through all the impressions, but
that's all I do.
You do a horrible impression of me.
I do a very bad impression of you. Yeah, I do a really good impression of it's nonverbal.
Yeah, no,
but it's an impression of Kevin and his brother.
Yeah,
talking to each other. Just, you can't see it.
It's not.
I'm
going to
teach everyone how to do it. Right.
No.
So okay.
No, it's not necessary.
Do your hands like they're spiders, right? Well, so pretend your hands are spiders, and then move the fingers, and then move your wrists to and fro. And then dip your shoulders up and down like that, and then you're basically Kevin and Eric Koval talking to each other.
I feel like that's racial. Ow.
How is that racial?
I don't know. My face hurts, though, because I'm smiling. All right. I'm not going to put you on the spot for all these impressions, but...
Listen, I don't feel like I'm that good at impressions. I think I'm best at impressions when we're just talking. Like, when you just put me in a spot like we're on a talk show, I feel like really good.
All right.
Because I felt the pressure. But it's like, if we just kicking it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the cantina.
Right.
And I was just like, yeah, and then Killer Mike, you know how Killer Mike be. He was like, here's the thing.
We were on break.
I do have a good. I am very good at the rapper Guru from Gangstar.
Oh yeah,
just saying the word also.
Okay. All right. This is very specific.
He always says also. He's always about the addendums. Yeah. Like, you know, like Guru wants you to. He upsells. He's in that Maxwell Street tradition. He's
rest just in
like,
peace. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So me and Premier, you know, we come through and we just keep hip hop alive, but also.
Yo, that's a good Guru, man.
I love Guru. From
me too, man.
God bless him. I'm so excited they got a new album out.
I know.
I'm so excited.
Now, can I ask you a question? Is it? I only heard like a few songs.
From what, the new Gangstar?
Meaning like they got a whole record coming?
They got a whole record coming, bro. He just dropped the playlist, man.
Oh, he did. All right.
Oh, man, it's going to be fire.
Yeah,
and it took him 10 years to make, which you know, like the Primo made it. Yeah.
No, it's thorough.
And yeah, man.
It's thorough.
Full cycle, bro. You know what I would love? I'm just putting my career request out into the universe. One, I want to write an opera called The Source Awards.
Nice.
About Big and Pac.
Wow.
And basically the length of the opera is it's like Tupac in prison, like with like a kind of a jerry-rigged closed circuit feed to the like watching the Source Awards, and we go back between Big and Tupac at the Source Awards, like, and we get their whole story and their internal monologue, but it's all just the length of the Source Awards. And it's got, but instead of like the actual quotes, like it's all like libretto. So it's all like, you know what I mean? Wow. It's like stylized, you know, an internal monologue. So, cause like I'm obsessed with Snoop being this, how I be feeling all the time, especially cause like I got this weird relationship with New York City. When he's like, the East Coast ain't got love for Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg. You know what I mean? But like, imagine that like an operatic.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful.
Like as an aria.
Yeah, I love it. And it's really, it's tragic. Like,
exactly.
An opera. Yeah.
Yo, it's about these young, formidable
gods.
Guys. Yeah, yeah. Who are warriors. You know what I mean? and brothers, and then this betrayal, tragic end, and then interlopers, like you got the Suge Knights, you got all these other side characters who are gassing it up, putting gas on the fire.
Yo, I'm excited for you to win the MacArthur Genius, fam.
Man, whatever.
I know. Yeah, but for real, I am though. All right. So, all right, Breakbeat shit. So this book is out. Maybe what we could do as we just wrap up, if you want to kick one more piece from the book.
Sure, we're wrapping up already.
I mean, I know we. We've been at it. I mean, trust. We have. I mean, this is me speaking a career goal, and I'm excited for our spinoff from the Corner Store. You know, just like whatever. You know, once we get a little bit. Yeah, we talked about this, but I want to do a show where we, you know, just basically review hip hop shit.
Yeah.
And just talk shit.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is.
Who wouldn't want to listen? You know what I mean?
That's what we do. So I don't, maybe it's just us.
We're very entertaining, Kevin.
All right. Well,
that's something I do know.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree.
No one's more entertaining than Kevin Colvin Idris.
Well, listen, you said it.
Sammy Davis Jr., but he's long since passed.
He's like our, but he's.
I know he's a black Jew.
But he's like our, like a godfather.
Right, because he's a black Jew.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the show will be called. Are you going to read another poem?
Just in case the listeners aren't clear, I'm the black and Kevin is the Jew.
I think they're clear.
No racial.
Yeah. Or very racial. That's okay.
Very racial.
Listen, yeah. That's
or
all right, too.
Racial.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Okay, my man. You want me to read one more poem?
Yeah.
I'm not going to read the Kanye West poem.
Okay.
Because I'm in Chicago and I want to make it out of here.
Wow.
Are people conflicted here?
It's a good poem, though.
How's Chicago feel? I feel like y'all are very loyal.
Yeah. Folks stay riding for him, but I think also he's burned a lot of bridges here, you know? But I also then people will come back and be like, well, there's a college dropout, which is a good point.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Yo, fam, I don't know.
He made the college dropout.
But he did make slow jams, though. My Uncle Steve was in the video. Anyway, I'm trying to think of what's the joint. We were talking about hip-hop. I feel like... I'm going to read like a short hip-hop one.
Okay.
But just on this thing about like timeliness, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because like I wrote this poem like before like the big news came out about Dude. And so it's interesting. Like, I kind of feel like I got to write like a part two now. But this is called Lil Nas X Brings the Country Together. The drum is a planet vast enough to hold anything, so everything is liable to end up in the stew. And when I saw them West End middle schoolers rock to it, I knew some forgot who built billboards in the first place. Must have forgot the origin of drum, banjo, and bass. Forgot how we landed the field and corrals and hollers. Holler. The music was segregated like the people for a reason. Rock and roll just black slang for sex coin because R&B was just sped up blues and blues was how people healed. The blues, a universal American noise like country. One of the genres people leave out when they say, I listen to everything, but. Genre is a satellite inside a pocket. Hip hop opens its velvet rope to all as long as it can fit over the drum where anyone is liable to end up looking back at you smiling the same smile. So much can be carved thin enough to fit in a pocket, sold and spread across corners of a nation, but everything belongs to the beat.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man, that's from Idris Goodwin's Can I Kick It? Thanks so much, man, for reading, for being here. Love that song, for real. Kids love that song.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I love that poem, man. And yeah, it is. You captured a moment that, you know, I don't think people would really capture. I think, you know, I hope he's not a one-hit wonder or anything, but I think if we don't capture those cultural moments, they will leave. And I love that you highlight what is best about the most, prolific culture really in the history of the planet.
Oh, and we just getting warm. We just getting started.
It does not stop. Thanks so much for being in the Corner Store, Idris Goodwin.
My pleasure, man.
Give out the socials one more time, man, before we
at Idris Goodwin, IDRISGOODWIN. I'm very findable. IG, Twitter. I have a website. Remember those? I'm on Facebooks. Idris Goodwin writes. Very findable.
Cannot Kick, it's a book, y'all. It's a beautiful, beautiful collections of poems, even for folks who don't necessarily rock with poems. But if you love hip hop, if you want a necessary voice critiquing the current structure of the country, please, please check out Cannot Kick It. You'll rock with it heavy. Thanks, man.
My man.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cash Era. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.